Good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Exactly 8 p.m. We shall commence our class. So today is 2nd September 2021, Thursday class. We will be continuing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning Teachings from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wuliang Yijing. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention and have a stable posture. We will, as usual, have our half an hour awareness-based meditation. We will off the light and you can commence your meditation. So always remember, our sole purpose and intent is to train our mind to be aware so that this awareness can be stabilized until we can realize our true mind, the awareness nature, then we use it to meditate. So awareness-based meditation is very simple when you understand the first three of the four support for awareness-based meditation is very important. The first support is relax body and mind completely. Free your mind. Relax. Be at ease. Do not hold on to anything. Do not worry about anything. Just let things be. Silence your mind completely. Then the second support is the moment you are silent, you are already aware, so you don't have to do anything. Maintain silence. Then the awareness will be there. So the second support is after relax is away. Then the third support is maintain this awareness for as long as you can to stabilize it so that your mind can become very quiet and very still to realize the true mind. Then use it to meditate, to develop understanding, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Okay. So I will let you meditate on your own. Okay, you all can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you need to use to live your life, to extend your meditation into life itself. Unless you are heedful, mindful throughout the day, you will not be able to maintain that heedfulness for long. And according to Lord Buddha, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead, the heedless are as if dead. So you can't stabilize your awareness nature to be mindful most of the time throughout the day. You will be heedless and you don't stand a chance as far as enlightenment is concerned. That's why you need to maintain the stability of mindfulness leading to heedfulness so that throughout the day, you are mindful and aware. That's why the daily mindfulness is very important. A good daily religious routine to anchor your mindfulness and your meditative training is very important. So all this additional understanding that you need to have, because meditation is life itself all the time, not only when you come to meditation class or attend retreat. That one is maybe formal meditation to train your stability of mindfulness, awareness, so that it will enable you to stabilize your true mind until the awareness nature become very stable. Then from then onward, you will be heedful most of the time. And you will develop progress and great understanding. A seed is so tiny, yet adultery is concealed within it. So this is very true. Even a thick trunk tree originates from a tiny seed. A large tree produces countless fruits. Within the fruits are seeds, and within the seeds are fruits. One gives rise to infinity, and infinity arises from one. So this is the basis of creation. I always share with you all, from the void, from zero, or we call it the emptiness, the void, comes one. Then from one comes infinity. So it's the same. One gives rise to infinity. But where did the one come from? It's from the void, emptiness, original nature, true nature. From there, everything arises. Then the creation continue, evolve, unending until the universe is what we are today. So this understanding is very profound. Unless you can realize your true mind and develop deep understanding of nature's phenomena, their universal characteristics, you can never fathom all this or comprehend all this. Okay, we will read on the commentaries. A thick trunk tree grows from a single tiny seed. After the seed has been planted in the soil with the proper amount of water and sunlight, it will sprout. Slowly, it will grow into a small tree, and then over time into a giant tree. I often say, one seed contains an ocean of fruits. The initial cause is actually like a gene, which is something microscopically tiny. The fruit that this seed bears, however, can fill the entire ocean. This is truly inconceivable. There is a Buddhist story about a time when the Buddha traveled to a small town. Upon hearing of Sakyamuni Buddha's impending arrival, the mayor thought, everywhere the Buddha goes, everyone is filled with admiration for him, and many asked to take refuge with him. He worried if all the residents in the town take refuge with the Buddha, what will that do to my authority? So the mayor announced that the town's residents were forbidden to make offering to the Buddha. Anyone who disobeyed would have to pay a fine. Because the fine was very high, the poor could not afford to pay it, and the wealthy were reluctant to give up so much. Therefore, after the Buddha arrived in town, though he went out to ask for alms day after day, his bowl remained empty. In this town, there was an elder who employed many servants. One of them was an old woman responsible for cleaning up leftover food scraps. One day, after everyone had eaten, she cleaned up the leftover as usual and took them out to throw away. As soon as she opened the back door, the Buddha walked past with the Sangha. The old woman saw the dignity of the Buddha and the Sangha, and the sight so delighted her that she wanted to make offering. So she walked towards the Buddha and said, I really want to make an offering, but I have nothing but the leftover food in my hand. I worried that making this kind of offering would be disrespectful to you. However, the Buddha smiled and said, this is very good. This is a superior offering. Although the old lady or woman knew she would be fine, her desire to make an offering was very strong. So she presented this leftover to the Buddha. The Buddha was joyful and gave the old woman a blessing that she would have great fortune, status, and worldly comfort in her next life. At that moment, someone walked by. Hearing the Buddha giving this blessing to the old woman, he asked curiously, "How can an offering of shabby leftover bring such great merits?" The Buddha smiled and asked this passerby, "Have you seen the big rain tree in the center of town?" "Yes, the canopy of that tree can cover 500 carriages." "I've heard from my grandparents that even when they were little, that tree's trunk was so thick that it took many people linking their arms to encircle it." The Buddha asked him again, "How big was the seed from which that huge tree grew?" He replied, "A seed is usually not very big." "Do you really believe that such a tiny seed can grow into a tree requiring so many people to surround it?" "Of course," the passersby believed that this tree grew from such a seed. The Buddha then said, "Willingness to make offering is like a seed. Nobody in town dared to make offering to the Sangha. Only this old lady had the courage to reverently plant this seed. This offering of food may be seen as crude, but the merit it will bring about in the future will be great." This passersby turned out to be a wealthy elder. After listening to the Buddha's explanation, he also wanted to make an offering to the Buddha. So he beseeched the Buddha, "Please come to my house tomorrow and allow me to make an offering to you, even though the mayor will levy a huge fine. I am willing to pay." The next day, the Buddha went to accept his offering. News of this incident spread to the mayor, who could not help but wonder what kind of teaching would make this elder so eager to make an offering that he would willingly pay the fine. Thus, he also invited the Buddha to come and teach him. After listening to the Buddha Dharma, the mayor was completely in awe. And together with all the town's residents, he asked to take refuge with the Buddha. This story tells us that a thick trunk tree is concealed within a tiny seed. After a seed grows into a tree, it will turn produce countless fruit. In turn, produce countless fruits. Within these fruits, there are seeds. Just as within effect are future causes. Therefore, within the cause are effect. And within effect, there are causes. Every seed contains an ocean of fruits. One gives rise to infinity, and infinity arises from one. This is just how a Buddha mind can transform myriad of sentient beings and inspire them to develop bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the enlightenment thought. Citta is mind or thought. Bodhi is enlightenment. So Bodhisattva actually planted the seeds of Bodhi to arise the Bodhicitta, the very, very sincere, beautiful enlightenment thought to go this way, to walk the path of the Bodhisattvas. So this Bodhicitta is like the seed. When you aspire strongly with sincerity to plant that, it will transform, it will pave the way for the possibility to become Sammasambuddha. Then as a Sammasambuddha, as a Bodhisattva, you will be able to help countless living beings and liberate them take them all across. That's the power of one sincere, beautiful bodhicitta. I read on. Then these bodhisattvas who planted the seed of Bodhi will inspire others, continuing on to infinity. So that's how all this become possible. So when you have the understanding, everything is possible. There is no limit to what your capability is. If you have sincerity, faith, and genuine heart, everything is possible. Like the Buddha always explained, mind is a foreigner of all things. When mind arises, all things arise. So everything starts from the first step, the first pure intent to cultivate, to plant the seed of Bodhi. So these are all very important understanding. As a cultivator, when we develop the cultivation, we must not have this type of wrong thought. Because a lot of cultivators, they don't have faith in what they are able or capable of. And I used to see a lot of cultivators say, this teaching is not for me because I can become a bodhisattva. I'm already very contented if I can become a sotapan or just a sainthood, first stage of sainthood. So they have this type of inferior negativity of thought process. They underestimate their potential, their capability, not knowing that they are like anyone with the capacity to be, to grow very, very special, very big. Because it's like the seed. We hold the potential to actually generate a lot of parami, a lot of wholesomeness, just from a single thought. A single thought of bodhicitta, wholesomeness. So when we have this understanding, we will have faith. We can generate the bodhicitta. That's why bodhicitta is very important. The enlightenment thought, the seed of enlightenment, we must plant it with sincerity, with deep faith. Then we determine strongly to walk this way. The first step to plant the seed of Bodhi deep into our nature, to go this way, following the Bodhisattva way, to cultivate, to perfect ourselves, to become Sammasambuddha. That's why the first step is very important. If you have that drive, that understanding, you will make the big difference. So cultivation is not about I can't, I don't have the potential. All these are from the thought that is limited, deluded, without understanding and wisdom. When you have the understanding, everything becomes possible. That's why the enlightened being, the Buddha, they never look down upon any living being. Because every living being has the same potential Buddha nature. Each and every one of us, we have the potential to become Sammasambuddha. And I like the way my refuge teacher, Master Sun Hua, puts it. He always said, in Mandarin, of course, Huo gen zhong sheng xiang cha yi nian zi qing zi jian. Means, the Buddha and ordinary living beings, Buddhajana, they only differ by a single thought. What is that single thought? The single thought of ignorance. Because of that single thought of ignorance, living being continue to fall. And the difference between Sammasambuddha and that living being is the Sammasambuddha started with a single thought of bodhicitta. That's how he become what he is. So that difference, you understand, you will be able to make it. Like I always said, for me, when I was young, I had this very, very strong understanding. My nature very strong. I always tell myself, if others can do, I can do. If there's a will, there's a way. Then this nature does not fear hard work, difficulty, obstruction. No. Whatever it understands, it knows is the truth, can lead to wholesomeness, goodness, and great value and potential. He will go all out to cultivate that understanding, perfect it. Then he will do what it needs to do. He will take the heavy vows, whatever that living being, ordinary living being, cannot undertake or even go ahead to take that vows. So all this, you must develop them if you want to be successful in your cultivation. Understanding that the potential of growing into something immense all start with the first step, the single thought, the aspiration, the motivation, the seed of Bohi. Okay, we will move on with the sharing. We are now at the next adapted verse. This one is more interesting. Wisdom is attained from living in this world. What is your understanding? You believe in this sentence? Yes, this sentence is perfectly true. Wisdom is attained from living in this world. But some people may feel funny. I have lived in this world for so long. How come I don't develop any wisdom? Because you don't have mindfulness. You don't have heedfulness. You don't know how to observe. You don't know how to develop the wisdom. Your life is our greatest teacher. Life itself is the meditation. If you understand this, then you can do it. That's why those who don't understand this, they can't. And to them, they will be puzzled. How can? Wisdom is attained from living in this world. No need to meditate. That is the thought always asking that question. For cultivators who understand, finally they will come to know life itself is the greatest teacher. And meditation is life itself. And without going through life, you cannot develop the wisdom. You cannot develop the heedfulness to confront life, to understand things, to awaken. Okay, I read on that. Wisdom is attained from living in this world. Very true. After completely eliminating the three mental hindrances. Okay, how come three, not mental hindrances? This one must be the evil roots. The three hindrances of greed, hatred, and delusion. Of the six sense object, Bodhisattva must again make great vows. By learning this wisdom, they attain infinite Dhamma. This is very true. Where do we go to seek wisdom? Wisdom is realized through our interaction with other people. In our daily living, as we encounter different people and matters and situations, as we learn about the working of the world, and come to understand people's habitual tendencies. From this, we can better understand the world and the differing perspective people hold. Different people with different perspective will experience the same thing differently. This is very true. As a cultivator, you have to understand this. Some people will agree with it. Greedily grasp at things, while others will generously share with everyone. They may even, upon seeing someone in need, give away whatever they have. By comprehending these different perspectives and experience, we begin to understand many principles. Therefore, principles are revealed through people and matter and situation. When we can take care of matter in a harmonious way, we are in harmony with the principles. When we work with people in a way that leaves everyone satisfied, it shows that our relationships are harmonious, and so is our conduct. When our relationship and our conduct are harmonious, then we are in perfect harmony with the principle. So people, matter, and principles are all realized in our daily living. So harmony is a very important understanding. That's why whatever Dhamma you cultivate, ultimately it will lead you to harmony. That's why I always say, we apply our wisdom, our Noble Eightfold Path, to resolve things amicably. Amicably means in harmony, no conflict, no misunderstanding. So all this represents one very important key understanding of wisdom. Wisdom leads to understanding. Understanding leads to harmony. Harmony leads to wholesomeness, goodness, virtue. They are all interrelated. So whatever that is rigid without harmony is not the true Dhamma. If we can thoroughly understand and be in perfect harmony with the principles, we can completely eliminate the three hindrances of the six sense object, means the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. The three hindrances can be referred to as greed, anger, anger is hatred, and ignorance. All the three obstructions, we go look at the notes, note 49. Also called the three severe obstructions, they are afflictions, karma, and retribution. So these three severe obstructions is very true. Affliction is suffering, misery. Then karma is when you have to come to take birth again and again. This is what karma is, samsara, lunhui. Then retribution is the friction of whatever action we do coming. So these three severe obstructions will keep you in samsara and bring about affliction, suffering, misery. And all these are the working of karma, your karmic retribution. They obstruct the Noble Path and our roots of goodness or wholesomeness. The obstruction of affliction are greed, hatred, and delusion. So greed, hatred, and delusion, they all rage within everyone, making it difficult for us to renounce the world, accept the teachings, awaken, and attain liberation. This obstruction refer to the constant arising of affliction. So this part is affliction. The obstruction of karma. The karma of five offenses and all the negative karma created by body, speech, and mind. These are the whole spectrum of karma. So body, speech, and mind are the three door where you can commit negativity of karma. So body, you know, with the physical body, you can kill people, you can harm people, you can cheat and deceive people. And of course, speech is the same. There are four types of wrong speeches. When you speak harshly, that is coming offense. Then when you speak with a lack of sincerity, or when you want to lie, to cheat, to deceive, and when you have ill intent to backbite or say negative thing about people, and you simply they call it frivolous speech. You think it's a joke, you simply say things, you lack mindfulness. And of course, our mind with mental intention, greed, hatred, and delusion can also cause negativity of what we call karmic offense, karmic negativity. So you add them up, 3, 3, 4, it becomes 10, the 10 wrong deeds. The retribution that are brought about, number 3 is the obstruction of retribution. The retribution that are brought about by affliction and karma, resulting in us falling into the 3 evil destiny. You know what is a 3 evil destiny, We have the 31 plane of existence. The last 3, the hell rhyme is one of the evil destiny. Then the beta rhyme of the hungry ghost is another evil destiny. Then you have the demon rhyme. These 3 are the evil destiny. Then actually is the animal rhyme, demon not consider evil yet. Sometimes the demon rhyme are consider better rhymes than the 3 woeful state. The 3 evil rhymes are the 3 woeful state in the Theravada tradition. 3 evil destiny. Okay, we go back to the sharing. Greed, hatred, and delusion hinders a clear understanding of the teaching, because they are evil, make you evil. That would allow us to gain a thorough understanding of the principles. Once there is this lack of clarity in our mind, our wisdom will naturally be diminished. Actually, it's not your wisdom diminished. Your wisdom cannot arise. But when we perfect our understanding of the principles, the 3 evil roots will be eliminated. Every morning, after listening to teachings and paying respect to the Buddha, we chant the dedication of merits or transform merits. Then I vow to eliminate the 3 obstructions and all afflictions. Doesn't this express our hope to eliminate our greed, hatred, and delusion? So this is what cultivators need to do. We need to understand what constitutes evil, expand on the understanding of these 3 evil roots. Sometimes in Mayana they call it the 3 poison. It can kill you spiritually. They are called poison. When you hold on to them spiritually, you are dead. You cannot cultivate. Where do these 3 kind of hindrance, greed, hatred, and delusion come from? The 6 sense object of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought. This sense object entice the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind, leading people to create karmic or karma. When we are surrounded by this object, we continuously give rise to greed and may be led into a mistaken course of action. This all begins with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Thus, if we can perfectly understand the principle of people, matter, and things, the 3 evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion of the 6 sense object will naturally be rooted out or eliminated. Actually, when we develop clear understanding of the cultivation, we do not actually fear the evil roots. We only need to understand that these are mind states that constitute evil, make you evil. That's why we have to avoid all evil, means we have to avoid arising the mental intention that has the evil roots. Because it will bring about karmic negativity, downfall. And you have these three evil roots, means you will break your precept, you will commit major evil. And all this will make you evil. So how can you cultivate? How can you purify your mind? How can you progress? You can't. That's why the evil root need to be understood clearly. The way I understand it is slightly different from normal people. When I see the danger of having this wrong thought that is conditioned by the evil roots, I will determine to abandon them, to prevent them from arising. Through what? Through the cultivation, following the third and fourth way as taught by Lord Buddha, to overcome unwholesome thought. There are five ways, but the third and the fourth way is meditative way. So use it. I will read on. I often mention our South African volunteers as an example of this. After Taiwanese immigrants began carrying out Shiji charity work there in 1992, we inspire many of the local Zulu people to become volunteers. Although they come from different cultural background, and most of them are Christians, they have truly embraced Shiji. They now feel that they are at home in Shiji, and they have taken on the responsibility of continuing the Qingshi Dharma lineage. They incorporate Qingshi aphorism into their everyday conversation and look to this saying for guidance on how to interact with people, with others, and deal with things. Every one of them also goes into their communities to serve others. Initially, Shiji volunteers encounter difficulties in carrying out the relief effort due to language barrier. A woman named Gladys, who had received assistance from Shiji, started helping by translating for the Shiji volunteers. As she translated, she came to better know and understand Shiji. And she began to take the Dhamma more deeply into her heart. She became the first Shiji volunteer from South Africa. For a very long time, she had been communicating the spirit of Shiji to the Zulu people. In addition to spreading the teaching, Shiji has been distributing material goods and embracing the local resident with love for over 10 years. This action had deeply touched the South Africans, so they are more than willing to help continue Shiji's Qingshi Dharma lineage. They also engage in walking meditation, taking each step in unison or chanting, with mind tranquil and clear, vows as vast as the ocean or the universe. We remain unwavering for countless kappa. So this is the Bodhisattva's understanding and mission. They also engage in walking meditation, taking step in unison while chanting, with mind tranquil and clear, vows as vast as the universe. We remain unwavering for countless kappas. In their harmonious spiritual practice center, they step purposefully forward, no difference from Shiji retreats anywhere else. So this is really beautiful. There is also a South African volunteer named Mavis, who had been devoted to Shiji for more than 10 years. She was a part of Shiji's Blue Bank project and did her best to help bring her village out of poverty. The residents of Blue Bank were generally poor and hostile to outsiders, so most people would not dare to enter the village. Mervis brought in 30 volunteers to distribute food, promote recycling, and assist in vocational trainings, thus helping local residents to gradually improve their lives through long-term care and love. Mervis also endured many hardships in her life. Her husband had an affair and then ran away with all their savings, leaving her with 5 young children to raise by herself. Facing such difficult struggles, how could an ordinary person not become filled with hate? It was during this time that Suchi volunteer came into her life and provided her with material goods and vocational training. Surrounded by the love and support, she was able to understand the principles and let go of her hate, her hatred and resentment. She opened up her heart with a spirit of great love, feeling, "There is no one in the world that I do not love. There is no one in the world that I do not trust. There is no one in the world that I cannot forgive." Thus, her definition of love broadened in scope. So in fact, this is a very good way to cultivate loving kindness, a very skillful way. The other one that I often help people develop is you have to have this understanding and determine to follow the understanding. Whosoever I see with the eyes of love. Can you do it? When you can have this, then you will become virtuous and very different. Then you always have this kindness in you, gentleness in you, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and also sincerity. Then whatever word you speak with kindness, gentleness, leading to harmony and understanding. So this is part and parcel of Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. It enhances our cultivation. Then just like this particular lady, she learned, "There is no one in the world that I do not love." Means even your enemy, people who cheated on you, did a lot of wrong thing towards you, you can still forgive them and love them. "Then there is no one in this world that I do not trust." This one you have to be a bit careful. Trust means complete trust based on understanding, not the foolish one. Foolish, you can be deceived, cheated. That's why Chief Reverend Kesri Damananda, our late chief, he always say, "Don't be a good-hearted fool." You are good-hearted, but you are a fool. You are foolish. That's why a lot of people make use of your generosity, your so-called compassion, and they deceive you. Then the last one that they practice is, "There is no one in the world that I cannot forgive." That one is also very important to do away with anger, hatred, unhappiness, resentment, envy, jealousy. That's why you learn to forgive and forget. Then you root out your own evil roots. When you forgive, technically you forgive yourself, because forgiveness frees yourself. When you forgive means you do not hate anymore, and you remove the evil roots. Then you no longer evil, you become beautiful. That's why I always have this advice to people: learn to forgive. Forgive and forget, and you will grow. Indirectly, when we forgive, we remove our evil roots of hatred, envy, jealousy, negativity. When you forgive your own nature. Means you free yourself. Without forgiveness, we cannot root out the evil root of hatred, anger, envy, jealousy. negativity of mind state. So all this understanding is very good. So I will read on. Thus, her definition of love broadened in scope. In addition to letting go of her resentment towards her husband, she also extended the love she felt for her children to include the elderly and the young in her community. She treated everyone as part of her family. So this will bring about a lot of joy, a lot of wholesomeness. Together, she and others, city volunteers, promoted environmental protection, vocational training, and so on. In the community, they taught local residents to sustain the love in their heart and to be content with their lives, so they could live together in peace and harmony. That's why contentment is very important. Because Melvis had this mindset, she was able to let go of the anger, the ignorance, and the greed of the six sense object, and understand that her hatred only exists because of her attachment to unenlightened love, means emotional love. That mundane love was limited to those close to her, such as the husband that she had exchanged vow with. When the two promised to remain married and grow old together, they had five children together and had seemed to be a very happy family until her husband had a sudden change of heart and their affection for each other was suddenly shattered. How could her love not turn to hatred under such circumstances? What exactly are these romantic sentiments found among men and women? After thoroughly investigating this, we find that in the end, they are all empty, not what you think. When a relationship falls apart, this sentiment can often turn into hatred. In the end, loyalty is no more, and the only thing left is animosity. This is due to greed, hatred, and delusion of ordinary people. However, if we can clearly understand the principle, we will not give rise to this greed, hatred, and delusion, or ignorance. For example, when Melvis learned to let go of her resentment, she was able to experience universal great love. Once there was such a great love in her, she was able to trust and forgive. After Melvis opened up her heart, she was able to happily become a church volunteer and work to help others. The other way to free the mind to understand is the law of karma. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. And like the Buddha say, our life, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditions supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So whatever happened is due to our karma. Very likely in the past, that's what we did to others. That's why this like the husband did to her. So the law of karma is a nature's law. And they are always based on the principle of cause and effect, moral causation. So when you understand this, you don't want to have this type of misery, affliction, suffering, then you better make sure you understand the law of karma well and follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind, so that you avoid having condition for you to become victim of circumstances and carry this affliction and retribution. So in that way, you can actually develop understanding and free your mind and have faith in the cultivation. So that one has helped many people, including my own self. So with that understanding, I encourage Kayamita to expand on that, so that whatever happened in life, do not blame, do not get angry or become unhappy, because he really had the wisdom to reply and contemplate the right view or point towards law of karma. Then when you know it's coming, you will never blame anybody for what happened. The law of karma is very powerful. Please be reminded, never, never go against it. Yeah. It's never worthwhile to violate this law. Mm. Many years after her husband had left her, after he had grown old and become severely ill, and his mistress no longer cared for him, he returned to his family. Maurice upheld the spirit of "there is no one in the world who I do not love." So she allowed him to return home and treat him like one of Tzuchi's care recipients. She believed in Tzuchi's teaching of great love, and she diligently eliminated her afflictions. By engaging in spiritual practice in this way, she is walking the path of diligence, that is the Jingshi Dhamma lineage. Not only did she listen to, memorize, and recite Jingshi aphorism, she put the teachings into practice and was able to truly expand her heart and mind. She replaced the limited personal love she had felt in the past with selfless great love, and learned to give with great and lasting compassion. Although her husband had treated her so coldly, cold-heartedly, she did not hold any grudges, and instead showed him great kindness. Bodhisattvas want to save sentient beings, so they must again make great vows. Mavis continuously make great vows, open up her heart, and expanded the scope of her love. She is a great example of this spirit. After several thousands of Tzuchi volunteers in South Africa, many had also endured great pain and suffering, but after encountering Tzuchi, they have chosen to walk the diligent path of the Jingshi Dhamma lineage to cleanse their mind. As the Buddha said, all living beings in the world have the Tathagata nature, the Buddha nature of wisdom. Regardless of ethnic background, everyone has the same pure nature as the Tathagata. By opening up their hearts and minds to go out and help others, the South African volunteers have benefited many people. These local bodhisattvas now, wearing blue uniform with white collars and white skirt, what a bright and hopeful image. They look so happy singing as they walk, and they are able to climb hills and mountains with ease. Though the roads they travel are rocky and uneven, in their hearts they have paved a bright and broad path that is smooth and straight. A straightforward and genuine mind is where spiritual cultivation takes place. That's why you need to be sincere, genuine, simple, straightforward. And their broad and open minds are very genuine. Thus, they have wholeheartedly dedicated themselves to Tzuchi and have vowed to go into the world to help people. Once, when some of these South African volunteers visited Taiwan, I asked them, "What was the song you were singing and signing to as you walk?" They told me, "The meaning of that song is an expression of our hope that Master Chen Yan's teaching was spread around the world." They are truly sincere and have vowed to come back as Tzuchi volunteer in their next life and for countless lifetime after that. This is truly moving. So they even make vow to become Tzuchi members. Because the Zulu volunteers in South Africa have open minds, they can listen to the Dhamma with sincere and pure heart. By hearing this wisdom, they attain infinite Dhamma. So they are able to completely eliminate the three hindrances of the six sense objects the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, and can pave a broad path for themselves. Thus, in the midst of their hardship, they can attain wisdom and unlock infinite Dhamma Dhammo. So this is really beautiful. The Buddha comes to the world to help us understand the truth that we have seen in South Africa, that everyone inherently has the same Buddha nature and wisdom. The responsibility of this teaching that we are all equal falls on everyone and must be applied to everyone. So not only do we accept the Dhamma ourselves, at the same time we also hope that everyone who has the will to do so will have the opportunity to listen to the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, and from understanding the principle of this sutra, join us in developing the Bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the enlightenment thought. This is a very important aspiration. When you make that aspiration with deep faith and sincerity, and you persevere, it will be the beginning of the Bodhisattva way, the journey to become the fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha. Bodhisattvas are those who have developed Bodhicitta, means planted the seed of Bodhi to become a Bodhisattva. Living Bodhisattva must similarly continue to make great vows. These sutras, many analogies tell us that as we learn from this sutra, we should not cling to the text itself, but must go into the world to put this teaching into practice. This is how we experience and realize this principle, and this is the only way to attain infinite Dhamma. Okay, good. I will mark this page. We will end here. Okay, now we will open up for meditation reporting and Dhamma Q&A and sharing. Huh?
Okay, I actually have something to share.
Oh, good.
Yes, good. It's about meditation.
Oh, sadhu.
About my meditation, right? Beginner. It is about my meditation, right? So I, as usual, will do the lying down meditation.
Yes.
Because, like what Brother Theo says, it's very, very well. The lying down actually brings you it kind of brings you directly to your true mind.
Much faster.
Not just bring you there, but it's much faster process.
Yeah, easier also because you are very relaxed. When you are in bed, lying down posture, you don't cross your leg, nothing stress. Then you just relax, maintain awareness, then stay in the heart area. But to do that, you must have stability of mindfulness. Yeah, those who are new will find it very difficult because they were dozed off or sometimes they can't maintain awareness. Then their mind play trick on them. That's why I said initially, if you are not trained, your spiritual faculty not stable, you are not able to do, then you do the normal formal meditation with object of meditation, anapanasati or whatever, or mind sweeping method. Stabilize it first, or do your bowing, your walking, daily routine. Then after that, stabilize it until mind enters sati. And then you try lying down meditation. Once you are able to do it, you will progress very fast. Very good. Okay, yes. So then you can continue.
That's what I did. Brother, for my case, I have in the past do a lot of anapanasati. Breathing, you know, is a very important part of anapanasati.
Yes. You will be very familiar because it's always with you. So you can hold on to your subtle breathing. By now, your breath should be like very subtle or hardly any breathing. But sometimes you can draw the anapanasati via. It's very easy. Once you have stabilized it, it's very easy. So it's up to us to vary it and use it.
Yes, correct. So for me, because I was trained, I so-called trained myself la, in
yes.
Anapanasana. So breathing.
Yeah. I also started with that, yeah.
So even though when I'm lying down, right, my yeah. I like, breathe in and out for
yes.
relaxation.
Correct, know? Correct. After you can start with that, no problem. Then after that, whatever happens, it will fall to the heart area. Well, Anapanasati will take you to the heart area.
Mm. But it's not the Anapanasati that usually do when I'm sitting down and all.
Correct, so this correct.
One is down. It's just the breathing to start off the so-called
yeah, meditation. Yeah. Because that is your object of meditation that you are very familiar with. So when you are lying down, you will be at your breath. Then you will know what to do because your mindfulness is already stable. Then whatever you do, you can be mindful of it. So usually that breath become very subtle.
Yes.
Initially, like very easy to keep.
Yeah, like that. You kind of like off, like but you're not dead, like you say, like you know.
Yeah. Correct.
Then you just so called aware of your heart. Okay, your heart beating.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. So, whatever vibration that you can detect, your heartbeat or whatever, you just let it move. Then, like you say. Assume you are dead. A dead person cannot do anything. So whatever happens, let it happen.
Yes.
That is the meaning of aware. Just let the form and mind move. So even very itchy, tinkling or what, no need to move because it will condition your mundane mind to have the intention to scratch and do what, but you try to persevere. Develop the patience to observe what happens if I do not allow it to condition the mundane mind to come out with the mental intention, then to scratch or whatever. Initially, it's very good to try all this. I try all this because I tell myself if I am dead, I cannot do anything. The only difference is now I am not dead, I am conscious, I am aware. So whatever that move and goes on within the six sandal, the physical body, six sandal, and the consciousness, the awareness can be aware. Then when it's aware, it can be aware of its conditioning. Want you to scratch, want you to think, want you to what. That's how we learn. That's how we observe and develop the contemplative understanding. Then sometimes because you are silent and aware, when your shift of consciousness happens, then you can awaken to a lot of things. Then you can understand a lot of things, what that nature is, the silent mind is, what that mundane mind is. And they are very near. They arise very fast. Then unless you are very skillful, able to like develop the for support very well, then this mind will return to its original state before the stirring. Then you will realize the true mind. Then stabilize it. And once you have done that, your meditation becomes very different. Like for your case, I think you can do all this already.
Yes, Brother, precisely.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it can be done quite easily, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing that I cannot control is like when I ask you, when I sneeze, so.
Oh, never mind. Let it happen.
It just happens, you know.
This is what we call the natural reaction of a form and mind. Because sometimes your senses, especially your nose, certain thing you will sneeze. Then it will trigger off. Then sometimes you may cough.
Yes.
These are natural happening.
Yes.
But whatever it is, we always say we choose accept everything as natural. Your body is just a body, it goes the way of nature. Then we start to understand how we function as a human being, how the form and mind actually interact and develop all this, then how the mental aspect is involved because the form and mind is interactive. They are integral. We call it the form and mind. Integral part of this so-called five aggregates of form and mind that karmically we are conditioned to come. Then as it grows, it evolves and become what it is. Then from there, if we are mindful and aware, we will learn a lot of things through our silent mind, through our observation. Then we will come to see the universal characteristic, why the teaching is such, why the Buddha said they are all dependent originating. It's just a phenomenon, no reality, no permanent unchanging entity within. He no you, he no me. And how did the egoic mind come out and hold itself? Like there is a thinker behind the thought. There is a personality. There is an ego. Because of that, selfishness arises. Emotional negativity arises. Fear arises. Delusion. So you see all this very clearly. Then we ask ourselves, are these real? Are these what mind is all about? Is the way it is because of ignorance, delusion, avijja, because you don't see it. Without the stability of mindfulness, the awakening means if you are not able to stay at your true mind, the silent mind, you cannot understand all this. That's why from there, the understanding surfaces. I always ask this question without thought, who are you? When Sankara activity is not there, when the mundane mind is not there, who are you? What are you? What is that nature? What is that thing? You cannot describe one unless you go through it. Then you will understand what that thing is. Then how come from there, like the Buddha said, mind is a forerunner. From there, the mundane mind keep on arising and passing away, creating. Because we have the senses. We have the consciousness trapped inside, and these two are interacting all the time. To live life, there must be consciousness. There must be thought process. There must be this form and mind movement. Yeah, this is the only vehicle and tool for you to come. Then to meditate, you must go through this to realize the true mind, to connect to the true nature. So all this understanding will arise once we can meditate following the Buddha's teaching or Huineng's three hallmark. First is to realize the true mind, means no thought. Once you break this no thought, the other Dhamma understanding will arise. Without realizing that true mind, you cannot meditate. That's why to meditate without that understanding is not meditation, is to go back to the mundane thought-based meditation, which is trying to talk about marks. Then the mind, that the mundane mind create, will dwell and create all sorts of attachment, clinging, grasping. So when we understand this, then we become different. Because when there is no mark of a self, of others, of phenomena, of Dhamma, and the duality, then that nature become very different. That nature, you will know, is not a being. Then that wisdom will shine forth, connected to the form and mind. Then the form and mind know how to live. Then it understand all this. That's how it liberate. That's how it can cease. It can just detach. So all this understanding is what meditation is all about. Without realizing the silent mind, without awakening to all this understanding through the Dhamma, the three turnings and all those things, then the no-mark understanding cannot surface. Once the no-thought leading to the cultivation to realize no-mark, then you become beautiful. Then after that, your mundane mind will collapse, then the no-dwelling can surface. That's how the Bodhi mind development stages, they really take off. So all this understanding is very important. So for you, it's very beautiful. Which is where you can do a lot of all these things right here. So what you need to do is to stabilize all this. Then let that nature develop the trust to meditate on its own, then it will move and it will activate a lot of things. Then you will experience many, many more of these movements.
Yes, yes, okay, so what you say is truly amazing part of the process of meditation, you know. So, okay, so let me begin with my description of my meditation. So I have my breathing, and then after that, it's very subtle, it just disappears, and then it goes to the heart, and the vibration of the heart, and then now my vibration of the heart is very soft and subtle. It's not like the past, you know.
Yes. Yeah, so
sometimes you can't
expect it.
It's very soft and subtle, and then after a while it disappears.
Yeah, correct.
And then after that it's just still and quiet and nothing, you know, nothing happened because there's no
during that time. That is your true mind. But the moment you try to know, the thought come in.
Yes, correct. But anyway, I don't try to know. It's just quiet and nothing happening.
Yes. What is important is don't even arise any thought. Just stay with it. Let things be. Then you will go to the realization, because that tranquil, what we call the unconditioned, that true mind, the awareness nature. No words on. You will go to the understanding of what that nature is. Because when you stay there, you can stay there without the center, it becomes different again. Then that one, finally, when your wisdom is very stable already, then it can cease. It will go to the cessation. And the cessation initially can be a glimpse. Then later on, it will be longer, like what you described last time. You went into it for quite a while. Then it will come out by itself on its own. Yeah. So you have to experience all this. Yeah. So don't try to know, just let it happen. Yeah. Then that nature inside will understand. That one will awaken.
Precisely this unconditioned self nature is very intelligent, Bratio.
Yes.
It's like you said, without center, and then and you give the trust, like you said, you trust the force support.
The nature to do. There's no interference from the thought.
Yes. Without the thought. So you just it just unfold by itself naturally, and it will appear to you, you know, with clarity and sharpness.
Correct.
So I'm going to tell you what happened in this silent mind, you know. In this silent mind, when it appear to me, so, I mean, this is just my words to describe it.
I know.
It's not the thing. So when this so-called I trust the awareness to meditate, so this phenomena appear, you know, and it's like, wow, super slow down, magnify, and just shows to me, my breathing, you know, brother. And this breathing is not what the normal human being would
breathe. Correct. There are a lot of things inside there.
There's a lot of things inside, exactly. It breaks parts by parts.
All the very, very fine movement and all those things. Normal people cannot perceive one, cannot even become aware one. But you can be aware. It's like the nature that awareness nature, the silent mind, accord and flow with every movement, without thought, without word. That's why everything becomes super sensitive and clear. That's how you understand many, many things.
You see a lot of things you never seen before as a human. You cannot see one.
You will go through the phase like there is no resistance at all. You don't resist anything. There is nothing to resist. It just like very small echo and flow. Just the mind that wants to know or resist or cease. That's why that nature
something as a mind that want to resist.
Ah, no more already. Want to know, want to resist, want to do this, want to become curious. No more. All the sankharasi. And that one is the real one. And that one, you can understand many, many things.
Oh, yes. Okay, brother, because of that, right? I don't know, brother. It just showed to me, naturally in the way that it unfold, right? The four phases of, you know, the four phases.
Yeah, that one you definitely can see. Yeah, then later on, in the midst of life, also you will see them. Like I say, truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? Then every moment of perception, every moment of feeling, every moment of seeing, hearing, all the whatever moment is all there. No. Yes. And that one is a flow. Flow.
Yes.
It's a flow.
The flow
then
is
you
so
saw, you will see within that moment is arising, sustaining, continuous one, without thought one.
Yes,
that
yes,
is
yes.
Ceasing.
The first phase, you know, the rising, the growth, then the decay.
Yeah, then the decay, then the ceasing.
Death, yes. It's all magnified and so down that one breath can see so many
things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every phenomena is like that.
Yes.
That's why every moment of sense experience is all like that. Everything is like that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's why you will see them within your field of perception, the pure perception. Even within the seeing, specific phenomenal awareness, all of the four stage cycle, very clear. That's why truth is everywhere. What can you see? The universal characteristic is everywhere. And during that time,
for me, because this is a former meditation, so clear. So when I go into my daily mindfulness, I have this specific phenomenon, but it's too fast. I mean, although it's slowed down, but it's not
correct.
As slow as this.
Right, definitely. The formal meditation, there is no movement of your physical. But when you live life, in the daily life, you are actually engaged.
Yes.
Your senses are fully engaged. But it can still be done.
Can still see, but not as how you call that? The clarity is even.
I understand why you had this understanding now, because your mundane mind has not collapsed. Later on, when your mundane mind collapses, it's different again. But that nature shine for. That nature shine for everything is specific phenomenal awareness. No need to do anything. That nature is with everything. That one later.
Right. Yes, my mundane mind not collapse. So daily mindfulness, it's not as magnified. It's magnified.
Correct.
So that
but not like in the formal meditation. Yes. Right.
It's more drastic, you know, more drastic.
You know? Correct. But you will see a lot of things that you never see before. Once you are able to develop that stability of the silent mind, then the mind enters the city. Then when you come out of it, your whatever daily mindfulness, everything you do is in city. That one, you will come to understand. Initially, I remember the mundane mind, very easy to develop the sati one, the specific phenomenal awareness. But later on, when the mundane mind collapsed, it is like there is no more mind for you to develop mindfulness. But actually, that time, no need to do already, because the awareness nature shine for already. You are actually the awareness itself. That's why a lot of people cannot go through that phase because they never realize that stage of the mundane mind collapsing. And very difficult to reach that. To reach that, you must progress until your this, what they call, Bodhi mind development, at least third stage and beyond. Third stage of Bodhi mind development and beyond. So that one, never mind, later, much later. But initially, the realization of the silent mind leading to the understanding that you are going through So now you will slowly develop the understanding to break through all the no mark of a cell. That one will break first. Once that one break, you become very beautiful already. Then after that, when you understand no mark of a cell, there is already an understanding of no mark of others. But the last one is more difficult. No mark of Dhamma, no mark of phenomena, no mark of the teaching, no mark of whatever that arises within the mundane world, because all these are still mark. The moment you give meaning, you dwell, they are still mark. And the mark can actually cause the mundane mind to surface again. And this mundane mind, they are very powerful. They can come back through the back door. But later on, after the mundane mind collapse already, the true mind is different. The true mind is like very fine, and you have to learn how to use this mind. I remember initially, I had to learn how to use this mind to develop the understanding to come back to the third level of seeing. Kan san, yu su san. So all these stages of transformation, they will be very different, and you will go through them. You will go through them. That's why this cultivation is very beautiful, very meaningful, and it's very interesting. So I started to you, Fuji.
Yes, so this so-called silent mind and awareness nature, that meditate by itself, right?
That yeah.
You do not detect where it goes.
It will move. It will be. It has its own intelligence to activate whichever part that need to be activated. Then after that nature do that thing, the byproduct, or you will know what happened. A lot of things will be shown to you. Then that's why I say you don't have to do anything technically. Then the understanding will arise by itself. We are through that silence, through that nature, you are insight into phenomena, it will awaken, and you will develop all this understanding. And when it arises, there is no word. But to describe it, to appreciate it, you have to use the word.
Yes, correct. So it's like no words, it just happened, it just show you.
Yeah.
Then when you awaken from your meditation, it's still coming out to you, you know,
to recollect what happened, because that one that happened is the unconditioned. No word, nothing. But the nature will understand. That's why it will insight into it, awaken and understand. And that understanding is a wisdom. And that wisdom you need to put into words to communicate, to express, and to share. Otherwise, people don't know what you are trying to tell them. If they don't go through, they cannot know. That's why you need all these 文字, words, language, and all those things to describe this. But the actual thing that happened is not the 文字 and the all those things. But the Dhamma is very funny. Can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Means you must go through that phase of awakening or cultivation in order to understand. That's why I always say all the sutra, all the profound teaching, the Dhamma, they are actually meant for enlightenment. But they are useful pointer, because you need all these words act like pointers to describe all this. Otherwise, people cannot understand and there's nothing to guide them. So all these are part and parcel of how you can make use of the mundane mind with the words, description, and the communication to actually share all this teaching. Because the actual one is beyond word, beyond talk, the unconditioned. You cannot even talk about it. So how can you teach? How can you share? How can you describe? you need to use wood, you need to use all this. So the beauty of all this cultivation is each and every one of us, like the Buddha say, he can only show you the way, right? Those who already awakened, we can only show people the way. They have to realize themselves, they have to walk the path themselves and awaken themselves. Like in your case, you go through, you can understand what I share. Then later on, as you go through deeper, more stable, then you can express it and describe it. Then you have the ability to share too. So that one will come later. But initially, because we are lucky in the sense that the sasana is around, the teaching is around, then my nature can share, explain, and guide most of you all. So all this can speed up the understanding, the cultivation. That's why a lot of you all can progress very fast. Actually, the way you all progress is very phenomenal. Normal cultivator cannot, even the first hallmark of winning, they cannot break. To realize the silent mind, the true mind, to understand what really is mindfulness, they can't even realize that. They can't even go near to that type of practices or cultivation. That's why very difficult for them to penetrate. They always go back to the mundane mind, the thought process. Even that sharing that I sent out, one of the, I think he's from India or what, the Jin Hao sent to me and I replied to him on. That one is actually not easy. That one, that person, he meditated very long already. He followed a lot of teaching on. But he finally found my teaching very unique. He said like the six Patreon, he said. That's why he was very interested and he listened. Then he asked me a lot of questions in the early days. Then later on, after I explained a few times, I think he find it very difficult to understand. Then he really tried. Then recently, what he asked is very beautiful. Maybe I read the thing. I asked Sui to open up. The one that I sent out was my Kayamita there.
Yes, I saw that. I read the reply from Bradu. Yeah. Yes, Bradu is really with your so-called teaching, right? Without the Sankara, with the silent mind.
I asked him, I said, who are you? Without thought, who are you? Without the Sankara activity and all this thing.
Then you know what happened to your body.
Okay, Sui is trying to get it out.
Today is the...
Not this one. This is a recent one, sorry. Earlier on, 71, I think. Lesson 71. Just wait for a while. Yes. This one. Show more. Oh, not this one also. Sorry, wait. This one is by Pocheng, Pocheng commented, I read this one. Pocheng commented, this video is very good. I want them to see, Share the screen. So this one, this video. This video is very good for all Kayamita and serious cultivator. I know, sadhu. You can develop profound understanding of who you are and what you are and how you function as a human being and breakthrough and progress. Mahasadhu to Brother Teo and Sister Pamasri for creating condition and the YouTube team for making this possible. Okay, we will go to the actual, I think this one, this one. Yes, this one, yeah.
You want to go to the actual YouTube?
Yeah, the actual YouTube, yeah. I think just further up on it. Oh, must be this one.
No, this is mini video.
Oh, mini video.
Brother, you can refer to my latest Mike and Amita notes. I just post it.
Okay, okay. Yeah, go to the latest. Yes. Okay. Good. So this is the whole thing. Okay. So I read to you all. You all listen. His name is Ishan Sadanan. 2 days ago, he said, "Sir," he always addressed me, "Sir." I don't know why. He said, "Quick question. From my own practice, this is what I can tell. Awareness include only the following possibility." This is according to him. Where he used the thought to understand. So it's very good already. Actually, not bad. He said, "Either the mind sink into an object. Yeah, that is the only way he can describe it. That is to say, if one is aware of a particular mental or physical object for more than a second, that is to say, it is focusing on it, or the mind get lost in thought, like moha, when you have delusion, or unaware, or lost in its perception, means you become heedless. This is to say, it does not know what it is doing, means heedless. You no longer aware. The third possibility is it is seemingly natural from the point of view of ignorant of a puttajana that it either goes outside, darting towards sight, sound, means the senses, smell, quickly, or inside to form thoughts, physical sensation, etc. And he said, "My question is simple, sir. If one knows something, it is still a thought, which is good." That's why he started to understand already. "If I know, right, know something happened, it is still a thought, correct? It may not be verbal. But knowing is thought, correct? Yeah, that is perception. When you perceive, you know, it's not a pure perception, then memory recall and become thought. If I call a table is already deluded, delusion, true. Cognition itself is thought, yes. But when you perceive with the memory, is thought. One cannot cognize form without description, which he came to know. Because whatever it perceived, the knowing is there. That's why he realized he cannot cognize something without description. It is subtle. Calling the color red. Red is a thought. How do I know it's red? From memory. So even if thoughts stop, you see, he assumed thoughts stop, but he has never realized that. He said, but how can the memory stop? So that is the question. This is quite good for him. So the way I answer him, you listen. I say, memory is still part of Sankara, an aggregate of mind. And since thought is response to memory, so memory is still a part of thought, forming its content. Whereas Sati is different. Sati is awareness before the knowing. So it's not a thought, because there is no perception to name or label it as yet. You need to understand what is specific phenomenal awareness. Means when your awareness and the phenomena is one without words, that is the deep. And spacious awareness without a center, means the egoic mind, to understand what pure awareness is. Pure awareness is means your awareness and the phenomena as one is pure, like a baby. Yeah? A baby. A baby, pure perception. No word, nothing. no memory, nothing, no conditioning. So it's sitting as they are. So this is not easy. That's why I told him, without thought, activity or sankara, who are you and what are you? I say, just silence everything to realize your true mind. Then you will understand better. Hope this helps. Because if you don't silence everything to realize your true mind, you cannot understand this meditation, this teaching of the Buddha. That's why he, from the thought, he tried to develop the understanding. You can't. That's why the teaching is from the silent mind. That's why now you understand why Huining is so wise. He said to teach meditation from the thought, not from the self nature, is to like talk about mark. It's not the real teaching. Yeah. So thought-based meditation and awareness-based meditation are two very different things. Then when you have this ability, all this become very clear. That's why to me, I don't have such problem. That's why I can explain to him. But for him to understand what I share is not easy. Even Jin Hao also commented. And I think Po Cheng also, somebody commented, I think Miss Lee or Po Cheng, I forgot. He used the word succinctly. I answer it succinctly. So you all go through all this, you will develop beautiful understanding. So Po Cheng, salute to you for arising the condition for us to have such good sharing.
Yes, thank you, Rad. So after I went through this silent mind, right? At first it's just like what I described, right? There's no words. You see phenomena happening, right?
Correct.
And the other thing I also noticed in the silent mind, Bratio, of course, it's after
after you come out.
Describing to you. Yeah. I can also hear, you know, Bratio. I can also hear the sound,
okay.
You know.
Okay, you continue.
The sound comes, it's like also showing you a profile like Bratio ever talk about. Right? Remember, Bratio, you say when you talk, right? When you talk, right? Once you stop means you stop. You arise the speech, and then after that, there's a death of the speech, right? So there's a profile. It's just that for mundane mind, you cannot.
You cannot have that sensitivity to differentiate.
To differentiate the different, actually there's many parts to the speech itself, you know, the word or the speech itself. So actually from that silent mind, I also can understand the profile of the sound as well, you know.
All this will come later. But what is important is, since you bring up this one, which is very good, now I will explain to you further.
Okay.
When you are with that nature, silent, it's just that nature. The moment that consciousness that arises of that sound, because once that sound arises, it's the conscious part. So the mundane mind arises already. But like I say, if you want to know, you can know. Understand, conscious, aware, at that moment, still no knowing it. But you want to know what it is, you perceive it. No problem. That's why that two nature is very close. From that silent, the senses are there, you can become conscious of things. When you become conscious, that is the aggregate going to come out. First is the pure consciousness. That pure consciousness, no word yet, no description yet. That's why you can differentiate between the profile and all those things. Those are the description already later on. But at that moment, when it arises, that's why I say, when you are in that spacious awareness, the silent mind, without a center, the oneness nature, you want to know, you can know. You want to be aware, you can. Then after that, you will not follow. Yeah. Then the arising and ceasing of phenomena, you have to silence and stay with that nature to let it happen. And then there is no interference, mistrust. But the moment you become curious, like sometimes song, they say, why like that? They're very excited. Then the whole thing is gone. So you continue to let things be and stay in that state. Then you start to understand that nature is that nature. Then from that nature, it's very near. It can just come out as the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the perception, the aggregate of mind. They come out very fast. That's why to realize that true mind, the silent mind, is not easy. Because most people cannot, because they cannot maintain, they cannot stay in that state. It's not to stay in that state, it's to understand that that is the unconditioned. But because your senses is there, when there is condition to trigger off the sense of consciousness, it will arise. When it arises, you can become conscious. But because of your stability, we call it samadhi. The stability will enable you to have that unwavering. Means you are collected, your mind is collected and unwavering. That it can stay and drop back to that nature, silent. Just the way. Then from the awareness, it can become conscious. After it becomes conscious, it can perceive, it can know, he wants to know. If it doesn't want, it continues to like meditate. Yeah. So this part, I have to explain to you so that you understand. Because you are going through this phase, initially you don't have the stability of understanding to describe all this. But it's already very beautiful. Just to experience this is not easy. That nature that realizes that true mind, and that true mind is completely just away. No resistance, no thought, no nothing inside there to like cause any movement at all. It's just that nature, like they call what like you accord and flow on wu wei. I think there's a Mandarin word, wu wei. So that one is very beautiful. There is nobody inside there, nothing to resist, no mundane mind, nothing. Don't even try to know or whatever. It's just that nature. That's why that awareness nature. Yeah. Then later on, when your wisdom has reached certain stability, then it decides, think also like that, don't think also like that. Then the mundane mind will start to transform. Then after that, it will go through that cessation. Then when it go through that cessation, the pure awareness also no more. That true mind also no more. Yeah. That is the unconditioned. That is nibbana. That is what we call cessation of form and mind. Even the aggregates of pure awareness also cease. Yeah. That one is enlightenment, nibbana. Yeah. So all this, the cultivator will go through. Yeah. And how long, it depends on the individual. Yeah. Then when it come out, you cannot decide. That nature will decide. Then when it come out, learn to see everything clearly. But from that nature, when it come out, wow, there is a lot of beautiful things to see, because you understand what that thing is. It's like creation, the starting of life. How you actually born into this universe. From that first instant that arise, like I said, from that oneness or Buddha nature or that cessation, the first thing to come out is the pure awareness. The pure awareness is the one that starts. Then from there, the mundane mind starts, the creation starts. So all this, you will experience. Then you will see how the sense data come in, like in slow motion for you to see. So one by one through the senses. And because your mindfulness awareness is so stable, this one later on, you will understand. Once you come out of the cessation that time, you will understand all this, you will see. That's why you will see the complete dwelling, paticca samuppada, not in theory or knowledge or description, is the actual silent mind observe all this. And you see how the sense data come in. And before the sense data come in, your mind, the movement, all, you very clear on what it is doing and how it is going to get itself entangled back into the old way and all those things. That's how I start to see and saw. Then I know already. All this is going to come back already. Then I become a human being again. So before that, a lot of things will happen. Then even at the brain there, I remember, the brain, like, not dead, but no activity, nothing on it. It's like the dynamo, the transformer, when it's running, there is a sound, like very small. But it's like the transformer is not moving. No vibration, nothing. Still. But it's not dead. It's actually that pure energy inside there. Then I realized that brain, because it is in that pure state, no activity, nothing. But the moment the true mind come back and split into three areas of consciousness, the moment it went up to the brain, zoom, the whole thing, like the transformer, start again. Then my brain activity all start again. Everything start again. Then I realize the memory, everything come out again. Before that, no. But you are not dead. That's why you can see how the brain activity shut down and how it start again. So all this is the marvel of the Buddhist teaching. We call it the cessation. You can say that one is enlightenment. Yes, it's enlightenment, but you cannot appreciate why that one is enlightenment and so beautiful. It's just cessation. Everything ceases. Then for the form and mind that go through this, it will understand. Because what happened inside there is so different, so beautiful. And we have to use word to describe all these things. It is never explained before. No book write about it. Nothing. So all this will be very beautiful. So sadhu to you, Ajahn, for creating the condition for me to share more today. Sadhu. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Gratitude. This, the unconditioned is so wise, you know, without words.
Yeah.
And it allows you to understand so many things, you know, about yourself, you know, and like you always say, Bratio, who are you, what are you, and how you function as a human, you know.
Yeah, the form and mind and all those things. Well, that nature is that nature. The form and mind is that form and mind. And that nature is not a being. It cannot come out and live life. There is the unconditioned. But from that nature, everything arises. And the first thing to come out is the pure awareness. That's why that is our true mind. Yeah. And the true mind that come out is the pure awareness. That's why you must realize the pure awareness, the silent mind. Without thought, who are you? You are just the pure awareness, that true mind, the silent mind. That's why that one can meditate.
Yes.
Then of course,
you just have to trust this awareness, the nature.
Yes.
Like Matthew said, you know, don't do anything, don't try to know.
Yeah.
Precisely when I hear the sound, right, the perceive the sound, right, I can see the flow, you know, the flow.
The movement. From
it's
the
very, very profile, you know.
The unconditioned, it come out to the pure awareness without a center. Spacious awareness without a center, then that one, because our senses are still connected, so whatever contact that trigger of sense or consciousness, you will be able to experience it. And the experience of it initially is the pure consciousness before the labeling, before the words, the concept, the knowing, and all those things. That's why the clarity is there. Then you want to know, you know. You don't want to know, it's suspect.
Yes. So actually, like, it come out and show it to me, right? And then it will show me the faces, the four faces.
Yeah,
the sound,
that one is you come out already. The awareness come out already.
Yes.
The awareness come out and the perception is there to understand all this. Before that, when you are with it, it's different again. That's why you have to silence everything and go to it. That's why the real awakening is where you can be at the moment of its arising, sustaining, and ceasing.
Yes, I see that.
But initially, it's without words.
You keep on seeing every moment of consciousness.
Whether seeing consciousness or hearing or smell, taste, all these are there.
Yes, all these are there.
Yes. Then when you come out of it to describe, then you can advise people. Unless your stability of mindfulness is so stable, you can be with the moment of its arising, sustaining, and ceasing. You cannot awaken. Because when you are with it, only you can awaken. Then you realize the universal characteristic. Well, everything is a phenomenon. Condition arising, causal phenomenon. And all this phenomena you see is movement. It's like slow motion.
Then
the sustainer, then the cessation, everything. Then even the face, how it grow, then how it decay. It's all very fast. At every moment, every instant, every phenomena, every senses is like that.
It's like the sine curve, you know, brother Theo. It's like the sine curve showing in a slow motion. Although you're like I said, the breath is very short, you know, to us. But it's like in the meditation, it's like super long like that, you know.
It's like a lot of things inside there. It's like, wow, unending, you want to know. That's why all this discrete awareness of the thing. Normal people cannot know. That's why last time I used to describe to people. One in-breath of awareness of the Anapanasati, it's like, to me, it's very long with a lot of things inside there.
Very, very long and very many discrete things, you know, that show. Very, very long. And Brother Theo, you're not tired of it.
Because the energy is so strong.
Yeah.
And that thing actually charge you up. And you feel like you have rested very long.
Yes.
And that mind is very different.
So anyway, Brother Theo, for this meditation, right, you when you come out also, it's not decided by you. It's by the nature, when it's over, it's over, you know, but you cannot decide, I must come out now or later, you know.
You cannot want to prolong it or what on, because it has its condition on. Then you will understand. After that, the condition no more, then you will come out and you will know.
It's very beautiful, Brother Theo.
The silent mind that Brother Theo taught us is really, really very, very good.
That
one is the most important. Without that, you cannot meditate.
Yes.
You cannot develop the real transformation and understanding. That's why thought-based meditation lead you nowhere.
Yes.
You must go for awareness-based, means the silent mind, the true mind, from that nature.
This teaching from the silent mind is very, very good and very wise. It's beautiful and amazing. Everybody must do it this way, you know.
Before Hui Ning came, there was no one to describe this type of thing. But even in Hui Ning's Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, the teaching, not many Zen master can really understand what he teach to describe all those things. In fact, a lot of the commentary, they are still not so accurate and precise. The way they explain is different. But the true one that Hui Ning went through, that one actually very, very few people can understand and very rare. And he described it very beautifully. The only thing is, there is not much detail of what this thing is, because these are recorded suttas from the student of Huining. And these students are, of course, they are very good because they can understand him. But to put it into words is not easy. And to have that stability to actually share all this is not easy. It seems that Six Patriarch Platform Sutta is not written by Six Patriarch. It's the disciple who recorded what happened. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like our My Kayamita website. If we don't have this internet technology or this thing, what my nature share will not be recorded. You understand? You understand? Will not be recorded. Means what? Means in future, maybe after my form and my no more, then some of you all want to keep the record. Maybe you go and write your own notes based on your understanding. But what you all write and what you all describe, if I don't edit, it will not be the same one. Now, because of the recording, everything you all listen, then you all send to me, then I edit. Now I have Ingbi to help me, which is very good. So all this can make the sharing and the teaching become available. So like I used to tell Kayamita in the early day at the retreat, I hinted many times, while this form MI is still available around, better make full use of it. Whatever you want to know, you better ask. Then my nature will share. So don't wait till condition no more already. Then that time only want to ask and do all this, too late already. In fact, Sakyamuni Buddha also hinted to Ananda Leo. But people don't realize the importance until the Buddha say he got 90 more days to live. Then Ananda started to cry and want him to stay on. But he said he already decided. The condition is already set. That's why he has to be there. And that time, technology was not there. There was no recording and all those things like what we have now. So he has to go by the memory of Ananda. So all this is meant to be. That's why it has its causes and conditions. That's why there is some discussion on this topic. Why don't the Buddha come 2,500 over years later or during this era? Then everything will be recorded and reviewed. But then you must also know, if he come now, means those people before, they cannot learn from him. They cannot have the condition. Then during that time, because of what the Buddha's teaching is, over the years, how it evolved, everything is meant to be. That's why after that, you understand the history of all this, how it come over to China, the Mahayana and all those things. Then how all this evolved. You will start to understand the causes and conditions, because everything is already said. We have the prediction from Dipankara Buddha to Sakyamuni. He already chose the timing, the era, everything already said. And they are Samasambuddha, they cannot be so like cha until they don't know the timing and all those things. But all this evolved, yes? It evolved many, many other conditions. So these are very beautiful understanding. So let us rejoice, Sadhu to Pocheng for all the good sharing. And also for PG for nominating Pocheng. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.